That's all right.
That kind of,
yeah. The question that you raise is as follows. Okay. What was a slave in the ancient world? Of course, the ancient world, you know, had slavery, and as a matter of fact, we know that in the United States there was still slavery right until 1865, officially. Okay, and we know that there is slavery even to this day in Muslim countries.
Right.
We know that.
Right.
Okay.
Well,
so
when you say on Pesach we are slaves under Pharaoh,
right?
We're not workers; we are slaves.
Of course.
Well, because of the conditions under which we work were later identified
okay.
as being slavery. That's
so slavery existed very much and still exists to a certain extent even in the world today.
Right,
okay. And the essence of slavery is number one, that the slave is owned bodily by the master. Okay, and therefore not only does he work for nothing, but the master has a right to treat him whichever way he wants to.
Right.
All right. This is what we understand by slavery.
You mean he can abuse him?
He can abuse him.
In the current,
I'm not talking about the Jewish concept.
I'm talking
about the Goyish concept.
So,
okay.
So the Jewish concept,
yes,
to me is more like what they used to do in early colonial times, the indentured servant.
Something like that.
Because that was also a kind of slavery, because they sold themselves for the length of the time for a certain amount of money.
Correct.
And when that was either the time and the money was paid out, they were then went free, which is very much like what the biblical. So it's more an indentured servant.
Correct.
Than a slave.
Yeah, correct.
If we think of it correctly.
And you know, and then, I mean, the Talmud gives all kinds. First of all, the Torah itself, you know, says that you have to treat the Eved with kindness.
Right.
You're not allowed to make him work on Shabbos, for example.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
But it's a different, it's
right.
a whole different concept.
And, right. And, you know, the fact that the Eved Ivri goes free after 6 years of servitude.
Right.
But, again, you know, we also distinguish between the one who was sold by the court because he robbed and he could not repay.
Right.
If you could repay, well, you weren't a slave anymore.
And your slave was a chattel.
Yeah.
Or was that chattel?
Not a chattel.
No. So it's really a different concept. I found that very interesting when I read about that recently.
Right. All right. And then, as we said, you see, with the case of the Oma Ivria, you know, this minor girl who was sold as a slave by her father for a certain amount of money, but the point is that she would not remain a slave for a lifetime. Either she's going to be married by the owner or the owner's son, or the moment that she shows signs of puberty, which is what this gumos that we're talking about, she automatically gains her freedom. Okay, she's no longer a minor, so therefore she cannot be held as a slave. Okay.
But suppose they sold her for 6 years or something, but within that
he's
time
he's not allowed to sell her to anybody else.
Even if it's within the time.
Not allowed to sell her to anyone else. The Torah says specifically that he's not permitted to take advantage of her. The Torah prohibits it. Okay.
Yeah, I find
right.
that very interesting.
Right.
You know,
right.
That there is this
right. You know, it's not, trading the slaves. I mean, the
exactly.
way, you know.
The thing is that if the master in the Torah, if the master knocks out a tooth or an eye,
right.
Yeah, right.
Then the slave goes free, which is
automatically.
Really,
and by the way, this is a Nebuchadnezzar that we're talking
yeah,
about.
Right. So I think it's very important to understand this concept because I've often heard the fact that the Bible, you know, that God condoned slavery because the Jews were able to do it. And I see a whole different concept, and I don't think it's
very
right.
much so. Whoever is completely ignorant of the Jewish attitude. No question about it.
It's a misreading or a misunderstanding
right,
of what the
right.
scripture
I think
has to
those
you know,
I mean,
unfortunately,
people,
reading an English translation, does not mean that you automatically understand the Bible.
I think they focus on the passage which says that the children of Ham, as they put it, are supposed to be servants.
Right.
So they interpret that the children of Ham are Africans.
Yes.
So that gives them the biblical or
biblical
interpretation.
Yeah, there were people,
that slavery was divinely ordained. Not so much that they pick it up from the concept that the Jews had slaves, right?
They're really
indentured services, so therefore...
No, it's true. I mean, that in the South, you had preachers who preached exactly those things back in the days of slavery.
Sure.
For unjustification. All right. So these, at any rate, are rulings by Rav Malkiyo. All right? On the other hand, glory, in other words, the lock of hair, that, at that point, you don't touch it. Or Ephemakla is burned ashes, which people would sometimes apply as a medication, but it's recommended by Rav Malkiyo, don't apply it, because it could cause burning, okay? And it could, to a wound, it might not help, it might only make it worse, all right? Ugovino and the cheese, here we were talking about the cheese, non-Jewish cheese. It's prohibited, in other words, to buy non-kosher cheese, okay? We'll discuss that next week in Yetzer Hashem in greater depth, okay? But right now we know that this is the reason why we Jews are careful, if we observe kosher, to buy cheese which is kosher cheese. Because
right.
And so this is the ruling of Rav Malkiyo, speaking for the rabbis. And then they say, let's move to Rav Malkiyo. So Rav Papa says, Mas nisi no mas niso, Rav Malkiyo, Shematato Rav Malkiyo. In other words, he says, if his teachings in the Mishnah or in the Gemara, then this is Rav Malkiyo's opinion. If it is Shematato, which means something that you can figure out logically, or whatever it may be, then that's Rav Malkiyo. The Simona, and how do I know which is which? He says, Maslisa Malkiso, that the teaching of the Mishnah or the Paraiso, he says, this is Malkiso because Malkiso looks like Malkiyo, understand? Okay, so presumably the other one would be Malkiyo. And he says, my Benayim, what is the difference of opinion really between them? Because in most cases they are, they have the same opinions. I mean, those are all different cases that were mentioned. No one is disputing them, with the one exception of what? Shafachas. Ikar b'nayo shafachas. The question of whether a rich woman has to have something to do in the house, or whether she can really take it easy or not. Where one says yes, and the other one says no.
Right.
Not required.
So
okay.
We had remedies, we had haircuts, and
right.
We had maidservants. And we had
children. Right.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, tonight is March the 9th, the year 2005. And we are now on Avodah Zarah, Chavtes Amud Beis, in other words, 29b. We start with a brand new Mishnah, and this is what we'll study tonight. Maybe a little bit of Gemara that comes after. Okay, it's a long Mishnah, relatively.
Oh,
okay,
that?
Yeah.
All the way down the bottom?
No, it goes about two-thirds of the way down. A little past the halfway mark, anyway. But it deals with different subjects, as we'll see in a second. The Mishnah begins by saying, Elu Dvorim, Shalom Dekechovim, Asurim. The Isuran Isur Hano. Alright, so we have to define certain things. First of all, it says that the following is a list of things pertaining to idolaters, right, which are prohibited to us, right, and the prohibition is actually a prohibition against having any benefit whatever out of it. we have to understand, with certain things, the Isser is what we would say an Isser Achila. In other words, there is a prohibition upon eating something. But presumably, if it were an article that could be sold, you could sell it. So that's what like they mean, that you know, to derive benefit from it. Okay. The same thing would apply. Maybe certain things that it's an Isser Shtia. In other words, it would be a prohibition on drinking. Okay. But when it comes to these things that are enumerated in the Mishnah over here, not only are they prohibited, let's say, for a Jew to eat or to drink, but they're also, you're not even allowed, you know, to do business with it. You're not allowed to have any benefit whatever out of it. Okay. So, now the list begins. First of all, Yahayayin. What is Hayayin? Yain, of course, we all know it means wine. Therefore, we know that the wine of an Aveda Zora, in other words, of an idolater, is prohibited to a Jew. Okay? Not only prohibited that you're not allowed to drink it, but, for example, a Jew wouldn't even be permitted to sell it or something like that in order to make profit. Okay?
Now, when they talk about Hayayin,
yeah,
does that include the grapes themselves?
No, not the grapes themselves, but we'll see. What I'm saying is not 100% right, because we'll see in a second, okay? We just have to have a little bit of patience with this particular Mishnah. All right. Okay, what is the next item mentioned? The Hachomets shall Ovdei Kochavim shall Yomit Chlaso Yayin. All right. Next item that is prohibited is vinegar of an idolater where the source of the vinegar was originally wine. In other words, not only is the wine itself prohibited, but even if it turned into vinegar, it would also be prohibited. Okay? Because we know that it is possible to make vinegar out of other substances, then that wouldn't apply. But what is the whole business with the wine? Why? Why wine?
No,
but why? That's the answer.
They
used it for idol worship, or libation, as they would say, right?
And we use it for sacramental purposes.
Right, right.
Double,
yeah,
double.
Right. Okay. Next item.
Should we use it for...
Okay. Then the next one is Vecheres Hadriani. Okay. Haha, good evening. How are you, Jerry? Where are you coming from now?
Milton Birnbaum.
Oh, you went to Milton Birnbaum's house? Yeah. Did they have trouble making the minion over there or not?
I'm sorry?
Did they have any trouble making the minion there?
What happened?
They did have.
His sister.
He lost the sister. Oh. Right, yeah, right.
Yeah, they...
Uh-huh. Right, yeah, it's supposed to be 7:15 tonight. Yeah, uh-huh. Okay. Erbser didn't go, did he? No, no, yeah.
He just started.
He was starting a new one. Okay, all right. Now, the next item that they mention, the Cheres Hadriani. Alright, the Hadriani part, maybe you recognize the word Hadrian, who was a Roman emperor. Okay? And this was a type of pottery which was used, in which they put in wine for storage, and it absorbed the taste of the wine. Now, obviously, if it was something that held, you know, wine and it absorbed the taste of it, then that would make it prohibited also. For this, just as the wine was prohibited, so then the container in this particular case would also be prohibited.
Did it have
prohibited.
The name of course, his picture was on the
container? No.
So I was thinking, you know, they all have
yeah,
did that.
Right. Yeah. But, I don't know, maybe he liked to have these kind of jugs, which... actually contained wine within, and where, you know, the jug itself was permeated with wine.
Yeah.
I have to point out that if we think that this is something only for antiquity, the truth of the matter is that this applies very much to beverages that we have today. You know, if we take a look at a list by the various kosher organizations of wines, for example. Okay, so we know about kosher wine. Then you go into the area of what we call, let's say, a liqueur. Okay? Now, liqueurs can be made either from a fruit essence, or it can be made also with grape juice in it, or wine, or something like that. So you have to know what the liqueur is based on, you know, and whether it contains any grape juice or wine within it, in which case, then again, it's prohibited to us. Now, a new problem arose when people realized that Scotch whiskey, which we enjoy on Shabbos for our Kiddush, there are some brands of Scotch whiskey which are kept in casks that once upon a time held wine in them. And the question is whether there is, as we would say, a tam shel yayin, in other words, the taste of yayin, you know, that affects the whiskey itself, that's still present over there. So this is why there are certain brands that they say should not be used, okay? So if we go back to the Scheres Hadriani, we see that even in the days when the Romans were ruling Eretz Yisrael, that the pottery, this specific type of pottery which contained wine within it, would be something that would be prohibited, just as we've already mentioned wine, and we've already mentioned vinegar, which is derived from wine.
Right.
Okay.
So the jugs themselves could not
use. Right, because of the fear that, you know, the taste of the wine is still within them, and therefore it would be prohibited. All right. Now the next one is very interesting. It's called the Oros Levuvin. Or means skin. Okay? It means skin, means leather. Okay?
Or, right. Or, I thought it was light.
That's with an olive. And this is with an iron. As you can see, the spelling is very important.
Leather,
right? Yeah, I said skin or leather. Exactly. Okay? So, that being the case, apparently they had this very delicious practice back in the days of idolatry, that they would take an animal and cut out the heart and then presumably burn it or something, or offer, you know, in some form of it. So, the Gemara... Yes. Right, yeah. The Levuvin means, in this particular case, like with the heart taken out. Okay? So, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, he qualifies it as follows. He says, "Bizman shehakera shelo ogul osur." If you see that the tear within the skin itself is round, then you know that it is prohibited, because it is the typical way in which they would cut out the heart in order to serve it as an offering. However, moshuch, if the tear is only a line drawn out, a straight line, or something not round, then in that particular case we could assume that it is simply a split in the skin, and that would not be used as an offering to Aveda Zara. So in that case, he says, if it's moshuch, right? So he says mutar. Okay.
I'm a little confused about this. Now, what are they objecting to? They're objecting to the skin? Why is the skin left over? Did they just sacrifice the kalim?
But the point is that once something has been used for Aveda Zora, as in the case if they took out the heart, then in that case that would already put an issue, would be a prohibition upon the rest of it, you know.
Thank you very much.
The incision is made in the heart or in the skin? That's what I don't understand.
The incision is in the skin itself. But you see that there's a round hole over there in the area where the heart would be.
Would have been, yeah.
Right. So you know that it's prohibited on the basis of it.
What did they do with the heart when they sacrificed the rest of the animal?
They burnt it, I guess, or something like that.
They used it to fill it with wind, with the wine.
Whatever they did, right. I mean, we don't have the, 100% picture or something like this. But, what this reminds me of, I'll be honest, be very honest. I mean, we know that, for example, in Mexico, that, this is a common form, whether it's among the Aztecs or the Mayans and so on. What did they do?
That
we cut out the hearts of the victims.
The presence of the animal?
Yeah.
What is this?
The Mayans or the Aztecs.
Oh, right.
Right, so they would cut out the hearts of the human being over there as a sacrifice.
No, they used to do it in front of their idols. They would cut out the hearts.
Well, presumably, why is it prohibited? Because it was a form of barbarism. That's the answer. All right, now the next category is, again, the meat of an Ovid of Avodah Zarah. So it says, Bosar ha-nichnas la-Avodah Zarah mutar ve-hayotze osu b'nei shehu kizivchei mesim. And this is the Rabbi Akiva. Okay. What Rabbi Akiva is saying over here is meat which is on its way to be used as a sacrifice for an idol, It would be permitted to a Jew if you could stop it.
You mean intercept it?
Intercept it, right.
It
have to be kosher.
Let's say the guy originally wanted to use this meat as an offering, right? Assuming, that of course it was kosher meat. All right. So, as long as it has not yet entered the idol's temple, then in that particular case you could intercept it and buy it from him and use it, okay? But if it had already been in the temple and then, let's say, they take it out of the temple, that is prohibited. Why is it prohibited? Because of the fact that it has been sacrificed, to Avodah Zarah, right? And they, as we'll see, they use a phrase that we find in the Book of Psalms and Tehillim in reference to the idols, that they call them Zivchei Mesim. In other words, sacrifices made to literally the dead, but of course what they mean by the dead, they mean the idols in this case. Zivchei Mesim, okay?
Why would we want to intercept meat that we have nothing to do with?
Simply in order to prevent it from being used for a Zedisara. That's all.
Isn't it a big leap of logic or faith to assume that the Romans are going to go to the trouble of having where Shohet killed the animal, and that the meat is therefore kosher according to our laws?
Or maybe the possibility that they're talking about is maybe not that you can eat it, but you could still have hanoa from it. In other words, you can sell it, do business with it. You understand? So that would be, so that aspect might be okay. Whereas once, it has already been serving Avodah Zarah in that particular case, not only can't you not eat it, but you can't have another from it either, which is one of the main points that they're making over here. Okay?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Rabbi Akiva, huh?
This is the words of Rabbi Akiva. Right. Then the next phrase is Hahokin the Tophos. Also, says for by hand, the haboy mutar. While tophos literally means disgusting things. Disgusting things. So, if people are going on their way to disgusting things, and Moshe explains what he means is that they're making pilgrimages to the idol temples, okay? Only they don't want to call them idol temples, and they say so that they use this thing. Just as,
what do you call it?
It's called over here turfos. Turfos means something disgusting, okay?
Disgusting.
Disgusting, lewd, something like that. Yeah, that's what it means, okay? So, that particular case, you know, it's... So, in that particular case, it says they're not allowed to do any business with them if they're on their way to it, okay? But the Haboyin, once they've already gone and they're on their way back home, then we turn, in that case, you can do business with them, okay? Because they don't have their idolatry. One of the major things goes back to something we learned when we first started Veda Zora. If you remember, one of the things that they were afraid of is that if you do business with a goy, an idolater, he's going to go back to his temple and thank his idol for the fact that he did business and he made a profit out of the Jew, okay? So that this is the general idea over here too. Yeah, they're going to Veda Zora, don't do business with that. But they did their business already, they're on their way home, all right, so you can do some business.
So pray about the next
right.
One.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
I don't see the logic of that either.
Right.
Well,
okay, now the next one.
Now they're living in the midst of this
okay.
World.
Make a living,
yeah.
So they've compromised.
Yeah.
You can't
right.
Have to imagine the life living.
Something
true,
happened.
True.
Right.
Okay. The next thing that they're dealing with is a chatzan and a hazagan. Sylvia, you asked me before about grapes.
What?
Grapes.
Grape?
Now, normally, grapes are perfectly okay. The grape itself, okay? I mean, you can go into any market over here and buy grapes, and there's no prohibition against it, okay? But as we see over here, if these are grapes that are dedicated to be used in the idolater's service, then in that particular case, we find that ha-chatzanim ha-zagin, chatzanim are the pits, and the zagin are the skins. Even they, shalov de kechavim, is asurin. They are prohibited. Not only that, but again, the prohibition also extends the Yisurin Isardor, during Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says that also you cannot even derive any benefit from the skin or the pits of the grapes. Okay?
Hey, doctor,
yes.
I think you missed sense.
I don't know.
I did.
Yeah, I think either it's either no don't or...
Oi, you were so right. Oi, my eye fell down several lines.
Yeah,
okay.
What you read was very interesting.
Yeah,
it's so bad.
Mine apologies, please, to you.
Okay.
Okay. So the next item, again, that they discussing over here in the Mishnah is notice. Oiv de kochodin konkenehen, the yain shall yisrael konus behen, asurim yisun isra hador. Divrei Rabbi Meir. Remember, Rabbi Meir in general is very tough on the idolaters, okay? He's a machmir. He's a machmir. Right. So, what he's saying over here, nodos are skins that they use to hold wine in, or any kind of liquid, okay? They still have countries, I know, where they use these skins instead of, let's say, using bottles or something like that, okay? So they use them as containers. Right.
Medieval days, too. Like
sure.
The knights, they carried skins for their drink.
Right, exactly.
And they carried wine.
Right, so those are the nodos, okay? Right, yeah. And the other, right. Yeah. So these skins that hold liquids, right, of the Avedic Azura, also the Kan Kanehen, Kankan is jugs, or it could be, jug in general, okay, is a Kankan, okay. The Kankanehen, and also the jugs, right? And now we're talking about not Goyish wine that's in there, because obviously that's prohibited, but even if you had the Yayin Shel Yisrael Konus Behen, understand? Even if it's Jewish wine that's put into these objects that belong to the idolaters, to the Goyim, okay? So they are prohibited, right? Asurin. The Isurin Yisraelor. Rav Meir says only are they prohibited, you know, that you should drink the wine that's in them, even though it was Jewish wine to begin with, but you're not even allowed to have any benefit whatever from it.
Right.
But the Chachamim are a little bit more lenient than Rabbi Meir in this respect, because it says Chachamim Aymrim, right? And the sages say that Ein Isurin Isahador, that the prohibition is a prohibition against deriving benefit. But it is not a prohibition against deriving benefit, but it is a prohibition against drinking the wine. Understand? The wine cannot be drunk. But if you could sell it to somebody, then in that particular case it would be okay. You're not violating the law. Okay? All right, now we come to the Chatzal Mahazagin, which I mentioned before. Those are the pits and the skins of grapes that belong to Goyim, and they're going to be used for idolatry. Then in that case, Asurin, again, they are prohibited. The Asurin Isra Hanor, Rabbi Meir again says that you can't even derive any benefit whatever from it.
They use that for in Italy today, they use that to make grappa out of it.
Right.
Make grappa out of it. Sure.
Correct.
Grappa.
Right. In other words,
Italian liqueur.
Yeah.
Very strong.
Right. The Chachamim Emrim, Lachen Asurin, Yveshim Etan. The sages say, I'll tell you what, they say, if it still is wet, then, as Irv said over here, it's going to be used in order to make more wine,
yeah.
Even the skin and the pits.
Right.
But if they're absolutely dry and they're no good anymore to make wine, then in that case, all right, could be used, could be sold for something, whatever you want to do. Hamurias. Murias is something that in ancient Rome, Greece, and so on and so forth, you know, in that world, they liked. What is it? It's a kind of a fish hash, okay? And very often they would add wine to it, okay? For even more flavor. So, Amurias, right? Ugvinas base unyanki. That means for the Yankee Stadium, right. And cheese, which is base unyanki. Unyanki, right. Okay, I have to explain to you. It's a cheese which was made in a certain place. I mean, Rashi says Shem HaKfar, it's the name of the village. That was made in this, it's the same, the cheese was made in this particular village. You understand? Like, let's say, Chavez, provolone. Okay.
Provolone.
So, there's a place, Beit Unyank, or Beit Unio, or something or other like that, because the key could be a Greek adjective form. Okay, it's a possibility. So at any rate, if it comes from this particular place where they make it, and Shalov de Kachavim, right, and the idolaters like to make it, so it's Asurin, the Yisun Isahador, the mayor. Okay, again, the Murias, we've already said, because sometimes they add wine to it, okay? to say nothing of the fact that you want to make sure that the fish itself, to begin with, is a kosher fish.
Myriads,
yes, the fish hash.
Right.
All right. The cheese, in all probability, is prohibited because they smeared it with lard or something in order to give it more taste. So that's the reason why. Of course they use pigs, what's haste? They were big pig eats.
We don't know
they pigged out on pigs. So this is probably the basis why this particular cheese is prohibited, and you know it's made by idolaters. So maybe they, you know, they like to use it also for the Rabbi Nazara because they consider it particularly flavorful. Okay, and of course Rabbi Meir says not only you know are they prohibited, meaning you know, not to eat, but they sue this door, right? You're not allowed to do any business with these things even. In Ravin Vedic. But the Chachamim Emrim, Chachamim saying, Ein Isun Isur Hanor. Alright, that you can do, you can sell them, but you can't eat them. Okay. Now, very interesting sidelight. My teacher, Professor Shaul Lieberman, years and years and years ago said that in Pompeii, in the ruins, they found a jar of Murius, and it said, Murius casta. Casta in Latin means pure. It's the same word as chaste. In other words, what? This is kosher Murius. So you can see, I mean, that they had, you know, they had kosher, not kosher Murius, even in those days, okay?
The Murius is already a prepared dish, though.
Yes. Fish.
Yeah, a fish stew?
Yeah, some kind of a hash of fish.
Hash.
Right. Yeah. Hmm. They cooked it or something, I don't know what they did with it. Okay, but some kind of a fish hash.
Murius casta never replaced cholera.
Yeah, right. That was very interesting. I mean, that in Pompeii, they would find it, you know.
Like that version of
right. Amar Rabbi Huda. This is another mice. So Rabbi Huda asked, Show Rabbi Yishmael is Rabbi Yehoshua. And he tells a story that Rabbi Yishmael asked Rabbi Yehoshua, Shuyimachal Kibbederich, while they were walking on the way, and he said to him, Amalo, Mipne Ma'al Esru Givinu Sevda Kechavim, tell me, why did they prohibit the cheeses of idolaters? So Amalo, so he answered him, and he said, Mipne Shema Amidin Oiso Bekevo Shaldavela. He says, it's because they use the rennet of the vela, in other words, of a trefa animal, in order to curdle the cheese.
Right,
okay?
Right. Well, I told you that today.
Right. This
you
is why.
Put cheese in the intestines of an animal? In the maw of an animal?
That's why some cheese is unattractive.
Right. Okay.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Kosher cheese is basically using a chemical product.
Correct.
They don't actually put it in the intestine, so you get it's an extra from the
intestine.
They
use
the rennet.
Yeah.
They grind it up.
Okay.
Alright,
that's
all right,
so
that's
rennet is something
for
the milk in the stomach,
the
cat?
Not the stomach. No.
Some say that it was on the stomach of the calf, and others say that it's simply something like that. It's some kind of a liquid that is found in the bottom. And the question is whether this liquid is really part of the animal's stomach or it's separate from it. This is what the question is, okay? literally it says actually that they put it into the stomach, into the cave.
Right.
Right. Yeah, that's the literal translation. But it's not exactly, I mean, the way it seems you know, over here. Okay. So anyway, even this question. So Obalo, so he said to him, Hey Halo Kevas Elo Hamur Mekevas Nevela. Look, he says, you were talking, he says, not we're not talking about eating right now, which is prohibited. But we're talking about what? Talking about Hada. In other words, deriving any benefit, whatever. Okay? All right.
No, it's so mostly from like selling commerce.
They prohibited it for eating, right? But they didn't prohibit it, you know, for hano. So he wants to know why. How could you justify that, you know, you are permitted, in other words, let's say, to do business with it, to sell it, and so on. That's what he's asking. Why does he ask the question? Because he says,
this is halal,
yes. It says, halo kevas ola. The ola is a burnt offering, right? In a burnt offering, everything theoretically has to be what? Burnt, correct? I mean, there are laws, you have to cut it to pieces, you have to put salt on it, etc. And then it gets burnt with blood, you sprinkle on the altar, and then you have to burn it, you know, until it's completely burnt, etc., etc. Everything sounds good, okay? The only thing is with an urla is that the skin could be used for the coin. He could do business with that. Okay, but set that aside for a moment. Basically, the urla, as we said, has to be completely destroyed, right? And you're not allowed to have any hanoa from it, right? No gain whatever out of it, right? And not only that, but it's also subject to the law of Ne'ila. Ne'ila means that if it's a sacrifice and you make an improper use of it, then in that particular case you are liable for Ne'ila, and there are penalties attached to it. You have to make good a certain amount of money, and in addition you have to put an additional amount of money as a fine, and so on and so forth, okay? There's a korban ne'ila, Hashem, it's a v'yosham, you know, a trespass offering, they call it, okay? Plus which you also have to pay an additional fine, a chomesh, of 20%, or one-fifth, right? Which may or may even wind up as a quarter, I mean, as 21, a quarter of the value plus, you know, in addition to God's blessing. All right. So he says that, look, Alo Kevas Ola Chamura, isn't the law concerning the Keva of a burnt offering more severe or more strict than the law concerning a nevela, in other words, a trefa animal? And yet, Amru Kohen, Amru means nevertheless, there is a statement where they have a tradition which says that Kohen Shadata Yofa Shofar Chaya. Now, the Kohen who has disgusting table manners, in other words, he'll eat anything in sight. Okay. He actually can drink the keva. In other words, that's why I said, you know, it's a liquid over there, right? He can drink it chaya. Chaya means fresh in this particular case. In other words, he can drink it, you know, he just scoops it up out of the ola, right? and he drinks it. Now, the average person is going to do it, the average Kohen. But this Kohen, he's a glutton, okay? He likes to do it, right? Well, they heard the law, but, and they didn't applaud him for it, okay? They didn't agree that it was right for him to do it, aval omru, but they said, nevertheless, ein nehenin, the law mo'alin. You're not allowed to have any enjoyment out of it, but it still doesn't involve me'ira. There's no trespass involved by the Kohen who did that.
Doctor,
so, yeah,
I'm
yes.
Completely confused here. It seems like they're talking about our Ola, right? But
yes.
We're also talking about the Ola of the Romans. So how do we conflate this? I mean, the Kohen isn't going to touch the or eat anything from an Ola of the Romans.
Okay, good.
These two things.
Good.
Okay.
But nevertheless, what started off this part of the discussion? The question is cheese. What did we say about the cheese? That it's because Ma'amir also became Oshodim. We'll identify the two together, because in either case, they're prohibited, that's all.
Are you aware of how they use this unit as a password?
Yeah, it's Chayv and Avela, absolutely, sure. Oh. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's much stronger than simply say Chayv. Chayv and Avela, whoosh. Oh, what?
A
fafilt in the veil. Okay. I've
been 4 years old. I never forgot it.
Okay. All right. So far he asked him Akasha.
Yeah.
You
wait,
know.
Really true.
He asked him Akasha
yeah.
about the Kevas Oila. Okay. He says, and yet, you know, permission was given. Permission. Not exactly permission, but nevertheless, they didn't say that it couldn't be done. That, you know, a Kohen who, Data Yofa, which means precisely just the opposite, doesn't mean that he has a wonderful mind. What it means is that he's, he's a glutton, you understand that? I mean, that they're using nice language to be just the opposite. He could drink this wine. Right. So, and then he said, all right. So, yeah. So why should they prohibit, you know, the cheese? Getting back to it. So he says, I'll give you another maaser. Mipnesha ma'amin and oiso became us egle of Edazora. Okay? It says, because they use the reddit, as we said, of animals. Egle means calves that are being used for Avodah Zarah, going to be sacrificed for Avodah Zarah. Okay? So, that being the case, Amalei, so he answered him, he said, look, in Cain, if this is the case, Lomalei Asurabado, yes, so how come then? Alright, so he can't eat. But why did the Chachamim say that if it's Egle Avodah Zarah, the sadness cheese, that also you shouldn't be able to get any benefit of it? Because we said there was a difference of opinion, Rabbi Meir said. You can't have, but the Chachamim said you could get Hanoah from it. Okay, you could sell it. So at this point, the Mishnah says, Hisiyah the Dover Acher. Hisiyah means that he got him off on a track to something else. Omalo, he said to him, Yishmael, yeah, hey, chato kere, ki tevim deidechem beyayin, or ki tevim deidayach. He says, tell me, the pasuk says, in Shir HaShirim, right, Yishakenim and Shikos Pihu, right, may he kiss me with the kisses of his mouth, right, Oh, what would that he would do? This is what how it's normally translated. Okay, Kitovim deDerchem Yain, because your love is even better, even sweeter than wine. Okay, yeah. But the question is, how should we read it? Should we read it Dodecha? Your, in which case it is being addressed to whom? To a male or to a female? Dick Dog.
I'm sorry, I wasn't paying attention. I know, I was just saying this is from Shira Shirima.
Yes. Right.
Right.
So Decha means you're talking to a male, okay? Whereas, take the identical spelling and you read it instead of Dodecha as Dodayach, then who would that be addressed to? Someone female. Okay. Now, many years ago, I don't know if you recall, I taught Shir HaShir. Okay? And at that particular time, we were learning it, right? Not just, I remember, you know, from the point of view of the pshat, of the simple meaning, but also from the allegorical meaning.
Right, right, right.
Because in the allegorical meaning, which is the way Rabbi Akiva and all the other great Chachamim understood it to this very day, we're talking about the fact that the male is the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. The female is Knesset Israel, people of Israel, okay? And it's the love between God and the people of Israel. So the question is then, to whom is this addressed? Kitovim, should we read it Kitovim Dodecha? In which case, it's the people of Israel who are saying it to the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, that your love is sweeter than wine? Or should we say here Dodayach, that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam is telling the people of Israel that your love is sweeter than wine? Okay? So Amar lo, so he said to him, no, you have to say Kitovim Dodecha, right? Okay, so Amar lo, ain't other way came. No. Obviously, he said to him as follows. He says, Amar lo, Kitovim Dodayach. This is what he must have said. Okay? Because otherwise, it wouldn't have the objection that follows. Kitovim Dodayach. In other words, the Rebbeinu Shel Olam says to the people of Israel that your love is sweeter than wine. Okay? So Amar lo, ino dorkei, he says, no, you cannot understand it that way, this particular pasuk. Shehare chadero melami the love. You can't do it because take a look at what the verse continues to say. It says, and it teaches how we should read it. That's what they mean by melami the love. It's written, L'reach shimonecha tovim. There's no question that that's the reading. Namely, that the fragrance of your ointments are, you know, of good, or you have the fragrance of sweet ointments. Okay? So, this is how he defined this business, and he said, well, but, I mean, he got him off the track, hopefully, you know, about the cheese business.
So it's from God speaking to Israel.
Right. Or Israel speaking to God. Take your pick. Okay.
Right, but in this case, did he prove the point that
it should be read, Kitovim Dodecha, that is Israel praising God, this particular sentence.
Israel praising God.
Sure.
Right. But, you know, back and forth. I mean, if you take a traditional text of Shir HaShirim with a traditional commentary, you'll see that the people of Israel realized that they sinned with the golden calf and so on, and they lost favor with God, and therefore, you know, but they yearn to be reunited with God. You understand? And how the neighboring nations tried to entice the people of Israel from serving God. But Israel remains loyal in spite of everything that happens to the people of Israel. They remain loyal to God and so on and so forth. This is the traditional interpretation of Shir HaShirim. Very, very beautiful. Okay. Yeah, so I'm going to stop right now. Okay, tonight is the 16th of March of the year 2005, I think. My mind is there. So, now we'll continue from where we left off last week. Last week, if you remember, we learned the great long Mishnah. So, now the Gemara begins dissecting it. to take it phrase by phrase and see what it is. So we're going to see.
So where are we here?
Okay, right where it says Gemara, which is right in the middle of the page. You see a great big gimel mem with a stroke over it? That's Gemara.
Oh, I'm not far enough.
Okay. All right. The Mishnah began by saying, Ele dvarim shalev de kechovim asur nisun isra hanoa, right? That these things that pertain to idolaters are not only prohibited to a Jew, but they are also prohibited for a Jew to have any benefit from it. In other words, let's say a Jew wants to sell it, they can't do it. So the following things that are listed, if you remember, so right, you have to go to the top of the page. So these are some of the things, you see, that we said asurin, in other words, they're prohibited. Let's say the first thing that we're going to mention is wine. Okay? Hayayin, remember? Okay. So, what about the wine? Not only is it also, in other words, it's prohibited for a Jew to drink the wine of an idolater, right? But he's also not allowed to even do business with this kind of wine and derive a benefit from it. Okay? So, now they want to go into it and explain why. Why the wine? So this is what the Gemara says. Yayin menalan. Where do we know that wine itself belongs in this category, that it's prohibited and also that you're not allowed to have any hanor, any benefit from it? So Amar Rabba Bar Abuha, Rabba Abuha said, Omar Kroy says, there's a pasuk. What is a pasuk? Pasuk, we have to find, actually, it's in Parshas Ha'azinu. And if you remember, Ha'azinu breaks down into, first of all, it's the song sung by Moses prior to his death, okay? And it contains words, first of all, at the beginning, how God took care of Israel, protected them, he carried them like on eagle's wings, if you remember. And then what did Israel do? They rebelled against God, right? By Yishman, Yeshurun, by Yevon, right? The Yeshurun, in other words, the Jewish people, they became fat, literally. In other words, life was so good, they became rich, whatever it may be, and they rebelled against the Beit HaShemayim, right? And therefore, they were attracted to what? They were attracted to the ways of the idolaters, okay? Of course, at the end, Verbeni Shalalem says that, nevertheless, he's going to protect the people of Israel. But at this particular point, the pasuk that they're going to quote over here is, what were the Jews doing? He says, Asher chelim zevochemo yochelu, right? That they eat the fat of their sacrifices, meaning the fat of idolatrous sacrifices. And you have to realize that fat was not considered bad in those days. Fat was considered good, you know. The more schmaltz, the better, you know. And yishtu yein nesichah, right? And they drink the wine that is poured out as a libation, right? So, ma zevach osa b'hador, just as an idolater's sacrifice is prohibited for anybody, to have any benefit derived from it. So, likewise, afyayin nami also. The pasuk shows us that wine too is prohibited b'hador. Okay? It's prohibited to derive any benefit from it. But not talking, as I said, not to drink it. I mean, that's understood. But, not to have benefit, and somebody's carrying it a step further, you see.
So,
and
that would eliminate Jews from being wine merchants to the world.
Well, it would eliminate Jews being wine merchants if they're selling idolaters wine. The question is, do we have idolaters today? This is a different problem. I mean, we are living, of course there are idolaters, I mean, we know that. But do we consider, for example, a good firm Christian as being an idolater or not? In reality, we have a differentiation between Yain Nesach, which is literally the wine of libation, right? And that is, you know, actually wine which is poured out as part of the service, the sacrifice of the, you know, the idolaters. And we have another category called Stam Yena. What's Stam? Anonymous, so to speak. In other words, this is wine that the people who do it, I mean, they're not idolaters, but they aren't Jews either, you see.
Didn't Rashi have lots of...
A Jew could sell Jewish wine to a goy,
yeah,
as long as he knows that he's not going to use that wine for idolatry. But if it's just, you know, to drink, then there's no prohibition on it.
Well, isn't that true?
Right.
It doesn't have to be Jewish wine. Wouldn't the differentiation be wine that's used for idolatry or sacrifices, and then table wine, ordinary wine, wine that isn't...
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean,
no,
that there is, I mean, so to speak, a differentiation between Nesach and Stam Yain.
Right.
But the question is, even Stam Yain, do we permit the use of that? The answer is no, we don't either. You understand? In other words, if I would go in and say, let's say I want Gala wine. Gala wine is not Yain Nesach, but what is it? It's Stam Yain.
So
we're
allowed to sell it, buy and sell it.
Yeah, you could sell it.
This is what they're talking about.
You could sell it, right, because it's not Yain Nesach, you see. So that's the difference, right. But, of course, neither of them can be, you know, can be bought by us, okay?
We can't buy them.
We can't drink them.
We can't drink them.
Right. You could buy. You could buy Gala wine and give to a goy as a gift. I mean, there wouldn't be a tremendous prohibition against it. You see, so that's also Hamor.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it's not idolatrous wine. Okay.
But you could buy and sell it.
Yes. Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Precisely. It can be copies, you know. Remember, we used to have Fred Schneider over here, may rest in peace. So just as the sacrifice of the idolater then is prohibited to have any hador from it, so likewise why? Okay, so now they say Zerach Gufei Minayim. All right, so good. You tell me you equate wine, right, with a sacrifice. So tell me, where do we find that the sacrifice is also prohibited for Hador? So the answer is very interesting. He says, Dichsiv was haste. He says, there is a pasuk, it happens to be a pasuk in Tehillim, where it says, Vayitzamdu Leval Peor. You know, among the various sins that the people of Israel committed in the wilderness, if you remember, after the whole business with Balak and so on, is that they became attached, that's what Vayitzamdu means in this case, to Baal Peor, the idol that the Moabites, worshipped, okay? led to all kinds of things, which eventually resulted in a disaster for the people of Israel. So until in Kuvav, where they have like a little review of what took place in Jewish history, so the pasuk, as we said, they became attached to Baal Peor, Vayochlu, and they ate Zivchei Mesim, literally the sacrifices of the dead. Now, in reality, what does Mesim mean over here? It means the Avodah Zarah. Means the idols, okay? But now we're going to interpret it in a very literal sense. What a mason. People were dead. People were dead, right? So we learn that Ma'amnes also Bahadol, even as the person who is dead, you're not allowed to derive any benefit from him. In the sense that, for example, you can't derive any benefit from the tachrichim that are prepared for a dead person or whatever it may be. I'm not talking now about a will, you understand? That's a different story. But the things that are associated with a dead person, as for example, tachrichim, that you're not allowed to have any hador from it, okay? From the keder, in which the dead person is put, you're not allowed to have any hador. You can't have any benefit from it, okay? So, Ma'amnes also about no, just as a dead one, a dead person is, you know, you cannot have any hador from him, so avzavach. So therefore, the equation says that a sacrifice too, nami also bahador, right? It's also prohibited. And then we say umeis gufeim an island. And how do we know that this is true as far as a dead person is concerned? So asya shom shom means that this is derived by the fact that the word shom occurs in connection with dead. And the word shom occurs in another case where we're going to see it's also bahadam. Okay? This is what we call a gezeira shom. What does gezeira shom mean? It means that you have a word in one pasuk, and then you have a similar word in a different situation. So, if you have, as we say, the Kabbalah, in other words, you have the tradition from someone who is a great rabbi, a great teacher, and who had it in turn from his teacher, who had it in turn from his teacher, you understand this how it works, then in that particular case you can apply the Gezeira Shoma. But it's not the kind of thing that you can stop in the Welt around, as we would say. You know, just go ahead and make up your own Gezeira Shoma. There has to be a tradition for it, okay? I can't take the word S in sentence A and the word S in sentence B and say, I got a Gezeira Shoma. I can't do that. But what is the Gezeira Shoma over here? Gezeira Shoma is the word Shom. Now, we would never associate it. I mean, what does Shom mean? There, right? There. Okay. So, we have, first of all, okay, the word Shom occurs where? The Egla Arufa. Remember what the Egla Arufa is?
Yeah.
Right. This is the heifer. In case they find a body, they don't know who murdered this person, right? Right. And so they try to judge near to what city, you know, it would be, and then the people in that city have to come and they have to offer a special sacrifice that we call the Egla Rufa. They have to take the heifer down to a stream, because it's written Banochal, right? And then what they have to do is to chop off its head, believe it or not, okay? It's not a sacrifice that's meant to be eaten, because what do they have to do with it? They have to bury it then over there, you understand? But before they actually decapitate the animal, so the Zakenim, the elders of the city, the important people, they have to put their hands upon the animal's head. This is what we call smicha in this particular case, and they have to say, Yodeinu leshofchu es hadom hazeh. Our hands did not shed this blood. V'yedeinu lo ravu, nor did our eyes see this murder being committed. And then, yes.
Is this also like a kind of kaparis?
Yes, because the next pasuk then says, Kaper li'am ha'Yisrael, asher podis ha'Hashem. In other words, grant atonement, O Lord, to this people whom you have redeemed, right? And let there not be any innocent blood shed. I mean, this is the following pasuk, what it says, okay? Yeah. So, inasmuch as it is associated with the idea of kapora, So it's become like a sacrifice, even though it's not a sacrifice. Understand? But the idea of kapara is there. So this is what the Gemara says. Then, let's see, where am I? Right. Okay. In what way? So he says, Ksiv Hocha, in one case, it's written, Vatomas Shom Miriam, right? That Miriam died there. So what are we establishing? Establishing that the word Shom in that Pasuk is related to what? To death. Okay? Ksiv Hocham, and then in the case of the Egel Arufa, it's written, the Ofu Shom Israel Glor Banochal, right? That they are to decapitate the animal there by the stream. So Mala Halon Osabah Noah, so even as in the case of Miriam who passed away, you're not allowed to derive any benefit because she is a base, right? So Afkar Dame Osabah Noah, so likewise over here too. And so then what do we see? So we see already that we can apply it by association from one thing to the next thing, the thing, to see that the wine, getting back to the original thing, is also bador, right? That you're not allowed to derive any benefit there.
What do they call
right.
The mate here? Is it the idol or the sacrifice? What do they terminate?
What do they terminate?
No, what? What actually are they saying is the mate? The mace, if you'll say.
Oh. Yeah. I talk Mamalosh.
That's all right. That's fine. I won't call the Ashkenazi group.
All right.
It's no problem.
Okay.
Do they call, as you said before, the idol or the korban? I mean, what are they saying is the mace here?
Okay. Because it's written by Yoklu. Zivchei Mason, right?
Okay.
But they ate sacrifices, and as we said before, Mason there, which really means idols, but, you know, we take it literally.
So we see it's the idols.
Right, okay. Right. So therefore we see that the sacrifice is also Bador, and since wine is, you know, the same as Chelo is for Chelo Yochelo, right? First eating of the Zevach, the sacrifices, and then Yishtu Yehde Sichab, the same Pasuk in Hazidu, right? So we see that therefore, the Yeh Nesach, in other words, wine which is used by idolaters for libation, this is as prohibited as Zivchei Mason, okay?
Uh-huh.
As Zivchei Mason, in other words, as sacrifices to an idol.
Our own sacrifices, they were permitted, right? They did eat of the
sacrifices. Our sacrifices? Yeah, it depended on the nature of the sacrifice.
Right.
Because we have different types. That's what we'll be reading now in the next couple of weeks in the Torah. A great deal of it, this coming Shabbos, where we deal with the burnt offering.
Yeah.
Nobody eats from that, okay? Because it has to be burnt completely, except for the skin, which the Torah says the Kohanim can have. Okay, all right. But anything else has to be burnt completely on the altar. Then you have, for example, the Chatos, which is the sin offering. You realize that you sinned, you made a mistake, and you sinned. And when you realize it, you want to atone for it, and so you bring a Chatos. A Chatos is written specifically that it's the Kohanim who eat that part after having, you know, a part of it, let's say the blood is sprinkled on the altar and so on, you know, and certain fats cannot be eaten, okay? But it's the Kohanim over there. And the same thing applies to an Oshom, a trespass offering, which is, there are certain specified cases where you have to bring an Oshom, right? It's, for example, you were supposed to testify to a case, and you didn't do it, okay? So, or you trespass something by using something which was dedicated to the Beis HaMikdash, and you use it for your private use. That's what we call Me'ilah. So we have Asham Me'ilah, and so on. But there are different reasons why we have the trespass offering. So that too is eaten by the Kohanim. Then we have things like Shlomim, peace offerings, Todah, the Thanksgiving offering. These were eaten by both the people who brought them, as well as giving parts to the Kohanim, as well as another part that was offered up on the Mizbeach. So you have different things, you see. So not all sacrifices were handled the same way.
No.
Right.
But this prohibition did not exist for our own.
No.
It had to do only with the
others. Right. With ours, we had other prohibitions, because you have to be careful about the time element and whether at the time when you're offering the sacrifice, whether your mind was not concentrating upon the reason why you were bringing this. You understand? You have to concentrate. You have to know. You have to have a kavana why you're doing these things. Okay. So, time element. Some sacrifices, for example, could be eaten, let's say, that day and the night that follows, and that's it. The following morning it has to be burnt if you haven't eaten anything. There are other sacrifices where it was that day, that night, and the following day. And then it has to be burnt if you haven't completed the, you know, the eating of the sacrifice and so on. So that is the time element. The kavana is what we call pigul. Pigul means that you brought a sacrifice, but you didn't realize what the sacrifice was for, or your mind shifted to something else, and you didn't have the proper kavana. So that has to be also, you're not allowed to eat it, okay? It has to be destroyed, okay? So there are different things. I mean, the sacrifices is not a very easy business. I mean, you have to know the nature of the individual sacrifices. All right. At any rate, so they finally conclude this little section by saying, and the Hasabin Allah, now that we know over there, so Amrei Devei Rabbi Yadai says that, Kapora Ksiv Bo Kikochim. In other words, that the idea of atonement is connected to the Egla Arufa as if it were a sacrifice. Okay? So from this we know that from sacrifice, I mean, from the Egla Arufa, just as you can't derive any benefit, and therefore you cannot derive any benefit from what? From Zichvei Mesim, right? And Zichvei Mesim means idols, and therefore that applies also to the wine that they have, as well as their sacrifices. So this is what this little section is telling us. Then we take a look at the Mishnah again up on the top of the page, and we see after the word Hayayin, what does it say? The Hachometz shall Ovdei Kochavim, right? The vinegar of idolaters, Shayomit Chilvulotso Yayin, that it started off as wine. As I pointed out last week in explaining the Mishnah, we know that vinegar can be derived from different sources. While wine is one of the major sources for the production of vinegar, but there's also such a thing as apple vinegar, right? Cider vinegar, as we call it, wine. Now, would cider vinegar be as prohibited as wine vinegar? No, because it's not something that was sacrificed, that is offered as a libation, understand? But vinegar which is derived from wine, that's already a different story. So that we cannot have any hador either from that, naturally. I mean, if we go and we buy a bottle of ketum vinegar or something like that, I mean, we know that we're getting it from wine which was Jewish wine, not Goyish wine, okay? So we see that the prohibition extends even to vinegar itself. Yeah. So now they say, all right, so they quote for the Mishnah, right? In other words, the vinegar of idolaters that to begin with was wine. So they say, Pshita, isn't this obvious? You know, Pshita in Aramaic is like the word Poshut. Okay, right. Isn't this obvious? So he says, Mishim de Achmitz, Pokabe Yisure. Why can't we say that once it became vinegary, once it soured, you understand? So why can't we say that the Isur, in other words, the prohibition in it, has disappeared? Because would they offer vinegar as a sacrifice? No, nobody's going to offer vinegar. So why can't we argue then that, you know, okay, the minute that it turns sour, then it's no longer good for wine. So in that case, we would say that the prohibition should also be gone. So Rav Ashi said, oh, Oskalash Be'inon. This comes to teach us another thing, he says. To teach us that Chometz Shelonu Biyad Oive Kechovim Ein Tzurech Choysom B'Tzurech Choysom. It says that our vinegar, meaning vinegar produced by a Jew, okay, if it is in the hand of an idolater, it does not require one seal within another seal. In other words, a double seal. We wanted to make sure that our wine is sealed so that, you know, the goy will not tamper with it, you understand? Right? So he says, but if it turns vinegary, so good, in that case we don't need a double seal. One seal is enough for it, in order to show that it's Jewish vinegar and not goyish vinegar. Okay? So, but it doesn't mean, you know, that the Yisur, that the prohibition automatically is gone. It's eased up. Okay. So, they say, why? Because, I mishum in sukei leminatske. It's obvious that if the prohibition is because, you know, they would use it for idolatry, libation, no. Obviously, they're not going to do it because, we say, it doesn't, you know, they wouldn't sacrifice, they wouldn't use vinegar as a libation to their god. Okay? The Yimishu Bechamufei, and if we're afraid that there's going to be an exchange, in other words, we won't know the difference between a Jewish wine or Jewish vinegar and a Goyish vinegar, you understand? So, Kevin, the Iker Chosam, my Torah and Messiah, inasmuch as there is still one seal on it that says that this is kosher wine, kosher vinegar, you understand? So, they're not going to go to the effort of trying to make counterfeit vinegar or something like that. It's not worth it to them. Okay? Omar Rabbi Eloy. Rabbi Eloy said, Shodninu. We have learned, he says, that yayin mevushol, wine which has been boiled, now we come into a new area, wine which has been boiled, shel ovde kechavim, and this is boiled wine of a goy, right, of an idolater. I'll use the word goy simply because it's easier to say a goy, okay? It's shorter than to say idolater. But we understand we're talking about idolaters, okay? If we say that wine which has been boiled, and this wine was goyish wine, shehayah b'tchiloso yayin osur, right? And we say that this wine to begin with was, that is, this vinegar to begin with, it was wine, and it's prohibited, so it says pshita. Then it's obvious, Bishum the Ifshil Pokale Yisura. Then in that particular case, we could argue, you know, that inasmuch as it became sour, then the issue disappears. So why do we insist that this vinegar cannot be used? So Rav Rashi said, this is to teach us what, that yayin mevushal shalonu biyad oivdei kechovim ein tzorich choyser misay choyser. So he comes in with a very liberal interpretation over here. What does he say? He says that our yayin mevushal, right? In other words, Jewish wine, which we have cooked. We'll talk about that in a moment, okay? And it's now in the hands of an idolater, right? So we say, we do not need a double seal on it. Why? Because if you're talking about using it as a libation, right? They would use as a libation wine which has been cooked. Understand? The goyim wouldn't do that either. Okay? The yibishot ichlufe. And if we are talking about exchanging, that's the next page. In other words, exchanging Jewish and goyish wine, if we don't know which is which. Then kevon the iko choysam echot leitorach mezayif. Inasmuch as we still have one seal upon it, so the goy is not going to go to the trouble of trying to exchange, because we can see the difference between one. Now remember, now what are we talking about? We're talking about yayin mevushal, okay. So this is now what we're up to. All right, so far we have discussed A, yayin nesach, okay? In other words, wine which is used as a libation to the goyim. Then I mentioned what they don't mention over here, but stam yenam, which is goyish wine, but not used for a libation, right? And now we come to the business of yayin mevushal, which means Jewish wine, not Goyish wine, we're not talking about that. We're talking about Jewish wine which has been cooked. And how strict do we have to be in reference to that? And this is a halakha problem that exists to this very day. Okay?
Why would they be cooking the wine?
Okay.
Is that something common?
If you look at it,
right. Today, we have the business of pasteurizing. Pasteurizing heats it.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently, long before Louis Pasteur, there were people, you know, who came and they would cook wine for whatever reason it was that they cooked it. Do I know why?
Well, once they cooked it, could they then use it for sacramental purpose?
No.
It could not be.
Yes and no. That would come into an area where today, I mean, this is one of the halakhic questions that we have, okay? I'll cut short to tell you right now. Most of the authorities today recognize yayin mevushal, particularly pasteurization, but there are others who say that the heat of pasteurization, which is approximately 160 degrees Fahrenheit, it's not enough. It should be 180 degrees Fahrenheit or something like that. So there is some disagreement, but we generally follow the liberal opinion of Reb Moshe Feinstein, who is one of the great American halakhic authorities, okay? And that pasteurization already is heat enough, okay? The advantage of yayin mevushal is the fact that we say that if a goy touches it, remember, this is what I mean. Why does it say over here, biyad, in the hand of an idolater? Because they were afraid that if a goy touched Jewish wine, then automatically that wine no longer contains, is no longer kosher or something like that. You understand? I mean, I'm sure that you've heard about it, okay. So by having Yain Mevushal, since we're not